watched that preview of that documentary they're making about what's her name that killed Selena?
Look, I don't have anything nice to say about that at all.
I don't either.
My Latina-ness will not allow me.
She is our Antichrist.
Fuck her. One of my favorite genres of TikToks right now is people in front of like a green screen background of a prison holding a chancla just waiting.
I love my TikTok right now because I am firmly in cooking land TikTok.
Cooking land?
Yeah. Every single video that has been coming up on my whatever it's called is all cooking related. All of it. Every single
one. There's some good recipes on
TikTok.
There's
so much good. Like, yeah. Like, I'm like, okay, favoriting this one, favoriting that one. Oh my God, I don't know how to make Middle Eastern food, but I'm making all of that you just made. Like, yeah, I'm glad I cleaned up my TikTok.
My TikTok is all Has Been Hotel and Hell of a Boss right now. And I'm so happy.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that.
Hey, so yeah, this is a problem. I gotta hide the chat because I'm reading everybody's chats and I'm just shooting
what
the shit with
you
now.
This is what happens when I don't. What are you talking about? Huh? What are you talking about?
Oh, I see what's happening here.
Yeah, I'm turning the tables.
Oh my, how the turns have tabled. Hey, y'all, listeners, we do record these podcast sessions live. And so with our patrons. So for $5 a month, you could also join and watch this shit show unfold before your very eyes. Our patrons are in the chat, making the chat right now, and I like talking with them, and I like reading what they have to say, which is why I have to hide it, and why I have to minimize this, because I will just shoot the shit with Chris about, like, TV shows and stuff, instead of talking about the actual TV show that we're here to talk about today. So, chat, I love you. Chris, your face is stupid, but your mustache looks great.
I know.
And I'm minimizing all of that, so that's the deal there.
I'll give that a 9 out of 10, Heather.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay. I'm not as practiced at it as you.
I know. You're not as big of a whore as me.
Absolutely not. I don't. No, I'm not as comfortable with self-pimpery as you are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Shall we intro a show today?
Yep.
Okay. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Dark Side Divas, the podcast where a woman and a gay man express their opinions about Star Wars. My name is Stephanie. I'm the woman half of the show.
And
that's all you get. You get what you get and you don't pitch a fit.
Okay. Well, okay. Anyway, hey, everybody, I'm Chris. I'm that homo BG droid sexual. Because I want that fucking astro droid more than anything in my life.
Oh, wow.
It was so cool
like,
looking.
Want it biblically?
No,
or want it...
just to like have okay. it because it's so cool
That's
looking.
Something you have to clarify.
No, I don't want to have sex with everything. Like, astro droids are out. Generally.
I love that we're in a place in our lives and with this podcast
finally
where that's
boundaries.
Definitely something you have to clarify.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. Mm-hmm. Oh, we'll talk.
Okay, go on.
We'll talk about that in a second. Anyway, and Steph,
yes.
I'm going to swing around and try for another direction.
I wish you would.
I wish you
I
would.
I wish you would.
You can hit it any which way.
Any which way.
So, Steph, speaking of which, last weekend was a 4-day weekend for me, so I stayed the fuck off social media.
Nice. Well done.
And that was the weekend where my phone blew the fuck up.
Oh, no.
Because
why?
Speaking of reputation, apparently Billy Dee Williams.
I love him so much.
He was asked in a interview, hey, why are you wearing Han Solo's clothes? And in his
not right that second. To be clear, there's a scene in the original trilogy. Billy Dee Williams at his big age was not sitting in this podcast interview wearing Han Solo clothes.
No, it was in Empire.
We're talking about a scene in the movie.
Yeah, he's
when
like,
Lando shows up, he is wearing Han Solo's clothes.
Right. And he just he did that smile he does. I'm getting moist just thinking about it.
Oh my God.
He does that smile and he just casually just says, "They were lovers." And I And so all of social media, apparently, it's canon now. Apparently, all of social media thought of me, and like I had DMs on Twitter, TikTok, nice. Instagram.
Yeah,
I got messages from people I never even talked to before. Apparently, that follow me. Don't know why. I'm not that interesting, but finally, I decided. You know what? Something's going on. Like, is somebody dead? Like, I double checked on Google. Nobody's dead. Okay, fine. So I am in line for, I don't remember what ride, but I'm outside. I'm not drinking anything. I see the interview, and I choke on air. Like, I was inhaling. He said it, and I started just choking. Like, anyway, nice. It's canon.
It's canon now. No, when you get a bunch of notifications like that, especially if you start seeing like hashtag Billy D. Williams on it, you're like, wait, what are you trying? No, internet, don't break my heart.
Right.
Nobody died except for the hearts of homophobes. Like, bigot shriveled inside. And that makes me happy. Now, the TikTok for that podcast, I can't remember the name of the podcast. It's not my podcast. I don't fucking care. But the TikTok for that podcast with that clip of that interview, we got tagged in the comments on that literally dozens of times.
Mm-hmm.
Because people know us. they know what it is on the internet that we want to see. And we want to see Billy D. Williams casually, nay, gleefully confirming that Lando Calrissian and Han Solo were the kind of lovers that would just exchange clothes from time to time. And that makes me happy, deep down inside, where I'm soft like a woman.
I'm thinking, I have to headcanon, that Lando was desperate to get the Falcon back. And so he's...
Are you saying that Han is just not that good a piece of ass?
No.
Because I disagree.
Han?
Yeah.
He, as attractive as he is, and as wonderful as he is at many, many times, he does give me bad sex energy.
But how? How you keep the fucking Princess of Alderaan, okay? The general of the rebellion and then the resistance. How you keep her digmatized that long if you're bad at it?
See, we don't know, too much about the after Return of the Jedi era of the relationship.
Long enough to make a baby.
Well, I mean, didn't take that long.
And then long enough to still be fond of each other after. Come on now.
I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to talk about that when we get to the original trilogy. I have a lot of complicated feelings about Han Solo. I love him a lot. Chewie's my favorite of that particular team. Han is great. Don't get me wrong. And I understand why Leia fell in love with him. And I understand why they were not together by the time Force Awakens came around.
No,
so.
that all tracks.
Yeah.
So. Look, Han Solo's an incurable fuckboy. but I think he's got to have some degree of skill or at least teachable enthusiasm.
Yeah.
In order to be able to keep Leia on the hook for as long as he did.
Anyway.
Okay, cool.
That's it. That's it for me.
So, but today we get to talk about somebody who has definitely got some skills and talent. But we'll get there.
Oh, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about before we get into why we're here today?
I am going to double check really quick because we suddenly... So, I don't know what's been going on lately, but we have a lot of new listeners. Really appreciate that, by the way, y'all. But
hey,
as a result, we may have some new reviews.
I love it.
Catherine 1986, which, hey, that's our age bracket, wrote in to say, I found your show on TikTok. I absolutely love your show. Thank you so much for making me feel like I belong. It is so hard being a woman in this fandom. Fuck everyone. I love y'all.
Indeed. Fuck everyone. We love you back. Thank you so much for that. That made my day. I like it. Yay. Okay. So let's get into why we're here today.
Okay.
All right. So what we're doing on this podcast is we're watching through the entire Star Wars visual story in chronological order, which means we started with episode 1, The Phantom Menace, and we have been flying a hastily constructed prototype forward through time since then. And we find ourselves today in Star Wars Rebels season 2, episode 7, Wings of the Master.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an intro?
Hera attacks. A group of airbenders on some planet I don't remember the name of needs supplies and have asked Phoenix Squadron for aid, but the planet is under the control of the evil Galactic Empire, and Daddy Kallus is waiting for them to attack. What will the Ghost Crew do?
It doesn't matter because Hera's a girl. Oh my god, canon. Oh my god.
I'm sorry, did you call them airbenders?
Okay, look, that's the first thing we're going to fucking talk about when we get into this episode. Look at their outfits and look at that planet and tell me they're not. That's not an airbender planet.
Are you conflating Ibar and Shantipol right now?
No.
Because Shantipol looks like the airbenders with like the mountain spires and everything.
Nope.
But Ibar is where people are starving.
Yeah, where the people are starving. Their outfits remind me of the animated show outfits of the airbender people up in the north.
I mean, all of that tracks, though, because fun fact, Dave Filoni was involved in the animated Avatar The Last Airbender.
Right, and he's mentioned, I don't remember, I saw this a long time ago now, and it was too late for me to mention it when we were doing Clone Wars, but he snuck in Avatar The Last Airbender references in Clone Wars. Yeah. So.
Rex has blue triangles on the backs of his hands as a nod to the markings on Aang.
Right. That's right. So,
and there are multiple clones that have Avatar reference names.
Right. So that's my observation. I'm sticking with it.
I think, you know what? Validated. Mm-hmm. There it is. Okay. So getting into this episode, we open the show. The Ghost is in hyperspace with Phoenix Squadron. So ding, Ghost Crew not being chased by the Empire.
Technically true.
Yeah, well,
they're coming for the Empire.
They'll be here in a second. They get a Zoom call from a guy named Ish Fom, talking about the people on Ibar who are being starved by the Empire, cutting rations. So the rebels are about to go do a food supply drop for them to be picked up by the underground network of people on Ibar who are going to be picking it up. But I want to point out, the guy's name is Ish Fom.
Mm-hmm.
But if you flip it to famish, as in famished.
God damn it, Star Wars.
Star Wars names strike again, and that's not a reach, okay? StarWars.com cites that, okay? That was intentional.
I quit. Why? Okay, anyway.
Yeah. So they pull up into the space around Ibar. So real quick about Ibar. Ibar is a mountainous temperate planet in the Outer Rim that is currently under Imperial control.
Mm-hmm.
There, that's all you get. Okay, so once they pop out of hyperspace, oops, the comms have been jammed, because who's there with an Imperial blockade? Kallus is there with an Imperial blockade. Phoenix Squadron has a transport, three fighters, and the Ghost.
Right.
Against an entire Imperial blockade. And that is not a skimpy Imperial blockade.
No, I counted four capital ships and a shit ton of TIE fighters, yeah.
Fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
So Hera's in charge of this little expedition. She's calling shots to the crew and stuff. We get Zeb gets a ding on Carabast.
Yep.
Carabast!
But the fire is super heavy, and Kallus is not an idiot. He is concentrating all fire on the transport.
Mm-hmm.
And the transport goes boom! Hera, for all of her magical, wonderful skill, is not able, like, they're just fucking overwhelmed.
It's not a fair fight.
That's not the Imperial's not brand, is it?
No, it's not.
They love unfair fights. So it's bad. They're losing fighters. They've lost the transport. Hera has to call an abort. The losses are just too fucking heavy. They all have to jump away.
And my last note, I fucking hate Star Wars. So for context, I had just watched this week's Bad Batch episodes. There were two of them.
Uh-huh.
My heart is broken, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to watch a Rebels episode, because Rebels is lighthearted. And watching the heartbreak on Hera's face...
Rebels is lighthearted.
Well, I'm assuming we got a Hondo episode. I believe this episode was...
Right,
like,
which means we're going to take a little bit of a dive.
Anyway, I'm a dumb bitch. But watching Hera's face when the transport is fucked and she calls for retreat broke my fucking heart.
I know, Space Mom, I'm so sorry.
Right.
I'm so sorry. Huh. But hey, let's pause our heartbreak here for a second.
Mm-hmm.
We have on this show, for those of you who are just joining us for Rebels, during Clone Wars, in fact, during all of Star Wars up to this point, we have had a war crime counter.
Oh, yeah.
So war crime counter on standby. Let's talk about it. Did the Empire just commit a war crime?
Well, it is a war crime to blow up humanitarian aid.
It is. So that's the thing. The usual caveat applies here, right? Mm-hmm. We know there's no Geneva Convention. There's no international humanitarian law in Star Wars. The closest thing they have to it is the Yavin Code, and that only has a couple of laws in it that we know about. And honestly, Obi-Wan Kenobi may have been lying about them when he cited them.
Yeah.
So we don't fucking know.
Yeah.
But Star Wars is written and created by Earthlings from Earth. We are Earthlings from Earth, so we are going to view this through the lens of Earthlings from Earth. And here on Earth, we have the Geneva Convention and international humanitarian law. So international humanitarian law states, quote, humanitarian relief personnel must be protected and respected.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Apply that to current events and modern context as you will.
But wait, Steph, there is no politics in Star Wars, and in no way does it reflect real life.
Certainly not from the show that was aired in 2015.
Right.
That couldn't ever continue to be relevant, lo this nearly a decade later. Anyway, here's the thing, though. International humanitarian law goes on to state, quote, under the statute of the International Criminal Court, intentionally directing attacks against personnel involved in humanitarian assistance missions in accordance with the Charter of the United Nations is a war crime in international armed conflicts, as long as such personnel are entitled to the protection given to civilians under international humanitarian law. Hence, members of armed forces delivering humanitarian aid are not covered by this rule.
Oh, so the rebels are fucked either way.
Right. The rebels are the ones who are actually edging into war crime territory here by using their combatants to try and deliver humanitarian aid. Technically, the Empire did not commit a war crime here by firing on combatants.
That's weird.
Now, had the rebels stopped their convoy and sent a transport with no combatants on board forward, then the law would have dictated that the Empire not fire on the transport.
And I have no doubt, and there's no doubt that Daddy Callus would have cooperated with that and allowed people to get fed.
Absolutely. There's certainly no deliberate starvation going on. We will get to it.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
But no ding on the war crime counter here.
Huh.
Because this is a fictional place where none of that's really happening.
Yeah.
Anyway, so getting back into fiction. All right, back at the fleet. Hera is, she's in a state. Okay.
Yeah.
Because that was upsetting. That was frustrating. She wants to try again. She knows that people are dying because her convoy didn't get through.
Right. Right.
So she's on the command deck, and everybody's there, right? And she's trying to make a case to go again. Okay. Commander Sato points out that blockade is really fucking tough, and our resources as a fleet are limited.
Yeah, we can't just keep fleeting transports at them and let them get blown up.
We can't spare that. We need to know that we're going to succeed in order to roll those dice. Like, I know, I get it. People are starving, but we are only a few ships.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so this is why we kind of rule the rebellion by committee right now, because we need all the voices. Speaking of voices, Rex speaks up.
Oh my gosh.
Because it turns out Rex knows a guy. And I'm starting to think we might need a post-retirement counter for Rex knows a guy.
I have in my notes, ask Steph, we can add this counter. Because I'm watching other Star Wars right now, and he does this shit all the time.
All the time.
Like, as soon as he's, like, not underneath Anakin Skywalker, he becomes Mr. Social Butterfly, and apparently has all the connections in the galaxy.
Right, and he just... he's been around. He's been having to network on his own since Order 66.
Right.
And so, and he's nothing if not motivated.
So it's official. So, let's add a Rex, what is it?
Rex knows a guy.
Rex knows a guy counter.
All right, ding on Rex knows a guy. He knows a shipmaster named Quarry who is developing a prototype heavy assault starfighter blockade buster, which is a lot of words.
That's a lot of words.
Yeah. But the shipmaster's a little quirky, a little eccentric. He will only talk about it in person. So you got to go to Shantipole, where he's based, to talk to him about this prototype. And we have some J-random pilots in the room, just so we have somebody to stand up and go, Shantipole? But every pilot knows that that's a one-way trip. You don't go to Shantipole.
I've never heard of Shantipole.
Me neither. Kanan volunteers Hera to go to fucking Shantipole. I love it. And Hera's like, what the fuck are you doing? Why? And Kanan's like, honey, the ship that can help us to help Ibar is on Shantipole, and I don't see anybody else volunteering. And I know you're gonna volunteer, so just go.
I'm like, yeah, so I did find this slightly awkward, because I was like, okay, Kanan, you usually don't like to voluntold your
right.
your master. And are you really going to risk her being pissed off at you right now? Because she's already not in a great
place. Already kind of, yeah, she's already not in a great headspace, and you're doing this. I see where he's going. I see what he's doing. We'll get to it in a sec, okay? Mm-hmm. Commander Sato signs off on it. Yes, this whole thing is happening. So we're all getting ready to fly out to Shantipole. Hera pulls Kanan aside. She's like, I cannot believe you just fucking volunteered me for this. And Kanan,
I can't either.
Right. Kanan gives her some cryptic Jedi shit. And Hera goes,
oh, are we talking in riddles now? Is that it?
Fine. You want me to spell it out for you? We can't beat that blockade. Not without a better ship, with better firepower, and the best pilot at the controls.
This is what he's doing. He knows that she's the best person to do this. He knows she's the best goddamn pilot the entire Rebellion's got. And he also knows that she is fixated on running this blockade and helping these people. Like, her inner pilot is in conflict with her inner space mom that wants to go help people. So he's like, no, we need your inner pilot right now. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. He's helping her to make that decision.
Prioritize.
And yeah, and that's what good partners do, mm-hmm. is they help you focus. And the very best, and not coincidentally, the very hottest partners are the ones who are so not intimidated by their partner's excellence that they are, in fact, their partner's loudest cheerleader. Because he's reminding her that she's the fucking best, and mm-hmm. that they need her and her goddamn extraordinary skill to go out there and go get us this goddamn ship right now. And there's nothing hotter than that. Kanan's so hot right now.
I agree.
He also, though, gets a ding on the Wreath Silas personally attacks me personally counter.
Why?
Because he figured out something that my magnificent husband figured out a long time ago, which is that I cannot be bossed. I cannot be bossed or voluntold to do anything. Mm-hmm. If you do try to boss me into something, even if I was going to do it anyway, I'm never going to do it now. Early signs of my neurodivergence that we all missed. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm about to say, you're in therapy, right? <I'm
kidding>. But what Lucas figured out and what Kanan knows too, if you present a voluntolding situation as you are a badass and you are the only person who can do this badass thing and do it right, well, suddenly it's my idea. Suddenly I have to do it because I'm the only one who can. And if I don't do it, it's not going to get done right. So now, yeah, of course I'll do it.
See, I prefer the passive aggressive route where, of course I do. Oh, you want me to do a thing? I'm not going to do it at all. In fact, do the opposite and just like, for example, you know, I wish
you. Honey, that's not passive aggressive. That's aggressive aggressive.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my bad. I am a lot more open these days, aren't I? you know, for example, being told I need to, you know, do a better job of cleaning while I'm cooking, so there's not mm-hmm. too many dishes at the end. Nah, I'm going to use more dishes. I'm going to leave them all in our big fat sink, and I'm going to make sure that I don't even wash out any of the ketchup stains or anything. Just going to leave that all there to dry.
Mm-hmm. I hate you. I'm so glad we don't share a kitchen anymore.
I'm actually a lot better at that stuff, but. Don't tell me to do something I was already going to do is what I'm saying.
Kanan is using the diplomacy that you learn from being a Jedi and being in a long-term relationship. He has figured out how to, and he's so not threatened by Hera's extraordinary skill that he's like, go, fucking be amazing. Go. So Hera says, okay, fine. She's going to go, but she does remind Kanan that she might not make it back with the ship in time to help with the blockade.
Right.
We have a ticking clock here. Okay, cool.
Well, because again, Star Wars timelines and hyperspace and all that kind of stuff.
Things Whatever. Happen when the plot needs them to happen.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Cool. So, the Phantom. takes off. Like, they've flown the ghost to the space around Shantipole. The Phantom undocks and goes flying off towards Shantipole. And we get a shot in the cockpit. And I legitimately laughed my ass off when Ezra literally pops up behind Kanan and is like, well, I guess I'm the co-pilot now.
Yeah, he announces he's a co-pilot. Chopper has a big fucking problem with this.
Yeah. Chopper's like, the fuck you are? And Ezra's like, I am the co-pilot. I called it. I'm sitting in the chair. This is me co-piloting. And they get into like a slap fight.
They did. And Kanan does one of my favorite lines, or says one of my favorite lines in the whole episode.
Uh-huh.
You're co-irritating me, both of you.
Because it's just the three of them on this ship right now. And Kanan, like, this is the crew that Kanan's got to roll with to go pick up more supplies for Ibar.
Yeah, guess what? Space Bomb was a great mediator, too. Don't have that now. Don't have that now
This is very much Dad got left alone with the two most problematic kids.
Right, and I'm thinking, where the fuck is Zeb and Sabine right now?
Well, that's a good question. Cut to Zeb and Sabine are in the back of the Phantom going with Hera down to Shantipole. It's not going well. Would you like to know about Shantipole?
Yes.
All right. So, Shantipole is a remote planet in the Midrim, once scouted as a rich source of volatile gases similar to Tabana. It depends on if you ask a clone how to pronounce that. Clones will tell you it's Tabana. Anyway, however, the planet's lovely combination of mountain spires and violently turbulent, highly electrified atmosphere has made that prospect of mining that planet for gases much more expensive than it's worth, so it's mostly abandoned
now. Oh my.
Yeah, this is why the pilots think of it as a one-way trip. That atmosphere is a fucker to fly through. As we observe in this whole scene.
Yeah, because Hera, who is an amazing fucking pilot, is having a very difficult time. She has to turn off the power in the ship or something because
no, she doesn't have to turn it off. The atmosphere turned off the power for her.
Yeah,
they're flying in, and she's like, so the atmosphere's a little tricky. And Zeb's like, fuck, does that mean? I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
Yeah,
that we might lose power. What are you talking about? And Sabine's like,
it means no power, no flying, just falling.
And Zeb is so annoyed by this, and he's like, I wouldn't have come on this mission if I had known that.
Yeah, and Hera's like, I know. That's why I didn't tell you.
Fucking hilarious.
Love it. It's dangerous. Dangerous as fuck, right? And so, like, they're flipping all over the place. Like, they get fucking zapped with lightning, and so the power's out, and Hera's essentially guiding a rock now to fall in whatever direction she can. And then all of a sudden, this gloriously done atmosphere, by the way, shout out to the artists on this one. Mm-hmm. The atmosphere looks great, but all of a sudden the clouds part and there are dicks. Just a field of dicks. They're mountains, but Lord, it did look like just phalluses as far as the eye could see to me.
Well, they look like stalactites that are reversed, right?
Is it the stalactites or the stalagmites? Because one is from the top and one is from the bottom.
You know what? They're stalag whatevers. They're pole like, Stephanie.
They're what?
Pole like.
Pole like?
Yeah.
We can just say they're dick like because they're dick like.
Well, no, because Shantipole. Get it?
I see what you're going for. Yeah. I don't think that was in any way what was intended, because the Shantipole thing. All right,
we have a character named Famine.
Famish, thank you.
Famish, I'm sorry.
Anyway, so the whole plot of this episode is inspired by a 1989 RPG called Strike Force Shantipole.
What?
It was published by West End Games for use as a module in the Star Wars the role-playing game. This is a tabletop RPG scenario.
I have a strong feeling my grandfather owned that book, because I have a distinct memory of those words on a bookcase.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh my gosh, I have to see if I can find it.
Yeah, I hope you can. But yeah, no, this is, so Shantipole, I don't think that they are trying to make puns here. I think that there's a lot of homage to old Star Wars shit.
Yeah,
in this episode.
For sure.
A lot.
So wait, you start off the module by falling out of the sky, crash landing to a planet?
You trip, fall, and land on a mountain dick.
Yep, that sounds like a tabletop role-playing game to me.
There you go. Yeah. as they are careening through this field of phalluses, Zeb happens to notice that one of them has a ship crashed into the side of it. And Zeb's like, that was a ship. Did you fucking see that?
Nah, that's ship. Your imagination.
Right? And then Hera sees something ahead and she's like, there's the landing field. And I'm like, girl, that is a postage stamp made out of garbage teetering on the top of a mountain. Do not call that a field.
Right? Oh, I don't God. Even see where you could land a small-ass phantom.
It really does seem like the phantom is going way too fucking fast.
Right.
To land on this thing. But Hera is who she is, which is an extraordinary pilot. And she does manage to crash, essentially, on this landing quote-unquote field, but skids the Phantom all the way to the edge so precariously, in fact, that when Zeb takes a step towards the nose of the ship, they almost fall. Mm-hmm. And Hera's like, back of the ship! Everybody to the back of the ship! Oh my God! And thank God, somebody up there saw them crash and got a space tow truck out. Grabs the ass into the Phantom and hauls it up onto the landing quote-unquote field.
Thank God.
And this is where they meet Quarry, the galaxy's shortest Mon Calamari.
Right? At first I was like, is that a kid? No, that's Mon Cal. Okay.
No, he's just a little old man.
He's really short. He's really cute.
And he's got like a grizzled beard effect going on his fishy face. He's giving Hera shit about basically crashing her ship, which I love.
And Zeb instantly hates him.
Yeah, because you don't talk shit to Space Mom.
No.
Fuck you. And Hera's cool with it because Hera is just the even-tempered person around here. And she's like, you do know that this whole planet is terrible for ships to fly, right? And Quarry says,
the perfect place to test them. If it can fly here, it can fly anywhere.
Okay, well, how did he get there?
I mean, this all, his logic makes sense in a mad engineer kind of way.
Yeah.
And also, bonus, it's the last place the Empire would look. Because who would fly there? Because you might fucking die.
Yeah. This is also the scene where we see the coolest looking astrodroid I've ever seen in my life.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about BG-81?
BG-81, yes, that is a reference to the Bee Gees. You'll notice that its head has a very disco-like effect. Uh-huh. And in fact, there is I don't know if it's a official, unofficial action figure thing. I have seen someone with a astrodroid unit looking just like BG. And I found a really short video back in the Vine days. Do you remember Vine? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where they had like a little
Vine walked so TikTok could run.
Right.
Yeah.
So they had a short video where they put lighting inside of the head. It was nice. Transparent and it glowed and they played Bee Gees music and it moved around. It was super, super cool. I want it.
So I love that. But the official inspiration for BG-81 is veteran ILM designer Bill George, BG, because he's the one who designed the B-Wings for Return of the Jedi.
That's awesome. Oh, we'll talk about that in a second.
And the fact that BG-81 has blue stripes on him is a nod to an old photo of Bill George actually working on the model for the B-Wing. He is wearing a striped blue shirt in the picture.
That is so cool.
So, hey, let's talk about Quarry.
Yeah.
So Quarry is a male Mon Calamari. He is named for Ralph McQuarrie. Ralph McQuarrie being one of the original concept artists for the original Star Wars trilogy and upon whose art the entire look of Star Wars Rebels is based.
Not just Rebels, but all of Star Wars. Like he is he's responsible for so many different things on Star Wars that George Lucas himself has said that, like, if it wasn't for him, the aesthetic of the movie just wouldn't have been as cohesive. So it cannot be understated how important Ralph McQuarrie is to Star Wars.
It cannot be overstated. Definitely be understated.
Yes, correct. Thank you.
So let's talk about the voice actor for Quarry.
Okay.
Some of y'all who listened, if you listened to our Clone Wars coverage, you may remember a fun game that I like to play, where I would make Chris guess who the voice actor was, because it was always down to two people. If there was a random other character in the episode, there was going to be one of two dudes who was going to be voicing that character. Okay. So, Chris, guess who the voice actor for Quarry is. You have a 50-50 shot.
Quarry Burton?
There you go.
Oh, I did it! Oh, my God!
You're the party star.
I'm the party star!
But do you know how I knew it was him? It was because he's using the same voice he uses on for one of the characters on Pirates of the Caribbean. So I was nice. Like, oh, that's Corey Burton.
So yeah, if for random other characters in any Dave Filoni production, it's going to be Corey Burton or D. Bradley Baker.
Yeah.
That's it. So yeah, in this case, it's Corey Burton for a review for everyone because we haven't heard from him in a while. Corey Burton does voices in damn near every Disney everything that needs a voice.
He is the voice of Disneyland now. So,
he's everywhere. Yeah. He's been in damn near every Disney animated project for the last couple of decades. We here on Dark Side Divas know him best from Clone Wars as the voice of Count Dooku and Cad Bane. Fun fact, though, that I saw when I was looking at his resume this time, because I just recently binged all of Ted Lasso.
Oh, my gosh.
Heather, have you watched Ted Lasso?
No, I keep hearing nothing but good things, but I've just never gotten around to it.
It's so good. It's not just a good show, right, which it is, but it also plays against all of the types. Like, there's a character who's a model and absolutely gorgeous, and a lesser show would make her a raging bitch. She is a ray of sunshine and positivity and sex positivity. It is a very sex positive show. It's a very non-toxic masculinity show. Anybody who is an asshole and full of toxic masculinity stands out like a sore thumb. It's such a good, and I don't know shit about soccer because it's about soccer. I don't know shit about soccer, but neither does the title character. So anyway, the reason I'm talking about Ted Lasso is there is an episode in the third season, those of you who have watched it, in which Ted Lasso is in Amsterdam and he is tripping balls, and there is a voice that comes to him during this moment that is the spirit of adventure. That's Corey Burton.
God damn it.
Corey Burton is the voice of Ted Lasso's spirit of adventure.
Wow.
And the voice of Corey, the Mon Calamarian ship designer that we have just met. Okay. So we're going into Corey's shop. He's going to show them the ship that they have come to look at.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's the prototype. He calls it the Blade Wing. And my brain came to a screeching halt here, Heather. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Up to this point in Star Wars, having watched from the original trilogy, you have X-Wings.
Yeah.
Clearly named because their wings form an X.
Right.
Which, never mind that the Orabesh alphabet does not have these letters. That's not the point. We are naming these ships after something that Earthlings from Earth recognize, which is another reason why we can cite the fucking Geneva Convention when we talk about this show, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Earthlings from Earth. So, X-Wings, their wings form an X. Y-Wings, their wings form a Y. B-Wings do not look like the letter B. Why are they called that? And just now, we finally justify it. B for blade, blade wing.
Yeah, so the first time I saw a reference to Blade Wing was in the early 90s PC game X-Wing, which was a flight simulator thing, and they had they had Blade Wing, in quotations, B-Wing as an option. So that's how I learned about it.
I never knew. If I had just thought to ask my husband, he probably could have told me.
So you brought up Bill George earlier. I'm going to talk about him a lot more because he is one of my family members' best friends.
No way!
He lived down the street.
Oh.
The whiskey drunkenness was amazing, and the stories were amazing, too. Bill George is one of the most celebrated visual effects artists ever. He started off as models. He always told this really funny story about when he lived in Van Nuys, California, which was not that far away from the special effects workshop of ILM back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
He would go digging through their trash and finding like all kinds of souvenirs and stuff. Cause they would, when a model got messed up, they wouldn't keep it. They would just throw it in a dumpster and he would collect it. And so when he was applying for a job at ILM, he had a model that he restored of a Y-Wing.
Nice.
And it was so good and so awesome. They eventually used that model in Return of the Jedi. So his actual model that he dug out of the trash was used in the movie.
Amazing.
There were signs even in the early 80s that visual effects were going to move away from models into full digital. So he kind of focused on that for his career, and he kind of stayed relevant through up till today. He's still working today. So
amazing.
He is a multi-time Oscar winner. He won. He's well because he works for ILM. They've won all.
That's amazing.
If you've seen Blade Runner, any of the first five Star Trek films, Ghostbusters 1 and 2. I believe there was a movie called Innerspace, which is where.
Oh yeah. I remember Innerspace.
That's where he won his first Academy Award, which I was like, that movie won an Academy Award, really?
Because of the effects.
Because
you shrink down Dennis Quaid and inject him into Martin Short's body, shit's going to get weird.
It's going to get really weird. And boy, did it get weird.
Anyway, that is the premise.
It was super cool for me to learn that this dude was involved with the Star Wars. I was very young, so I don't remember. But not only that, but he's also, y'all, if you go to a theme park at Disneyland, or Disney World, Disneyland, doesn't matter. He has helped create a lot of the visual effects for the rides. He oversaw Star Tours when they redid it. Star Wars Rise of the Resistance, Guardians of the Galaxy, Cosmic Rewind. Like, all the cool rides that have come out in the last 6 or 7 years, he's had a part to play in it. So he's not just for movies, y'all.
That's amazing. I didn't know. I had no idea going into this episode that we were going to be talking about such a certified badass. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really cool.
And the reason why the B-Wing was orange was they were looking at different ways of making the ships more distinct. And there was an idea on the table of using different colors for certain fighters and ships, like the B-Wings were going to be orange in Return of the Jedi. And it was like, no, that was going to make everything look too weird. So they ended up not doing it.
Yes. The B-Wings being orange would be the weird thing in Return of the Jedi.
But the B-Wings
are cool.
Not
the murder bears. Not the murder bears down in the forest.
Hey.
B-Wings being orange.
We love the Ewoks.
That's a bridge too far.
I love Ewoks. What's wrong with you?
I fucking love Ewoks. I'm just saying. That's weird.
I mean, never mind the fact that they ate people, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. They're stormtroopers. Okay. They're delicious.
We will get there when we get there.
But let's talk about the B-Wings. B-Wings are basically... massive guns with a little cockpit. They have multiple ion cannons.
He said little cock.
Little cock. It has a robust shield generator, hyperdrive, or it's supposed to have a hyperdrive, not in this episode.
It's a prototype.
Hey, that's fine. Three levels of laser cannons, three levels as an intensity. Problem with using the top intensity all the time, it drains your shield generator, your hyperdrive, and all your other systems, but it packs a wallop, and it can hold up to 10 photon torpedoes, which is insane.
Do we have photon torpedoes in Star Wars?
Missiles, whatever they're called. Yeah. They do use the word torpedo in the episode, so I was they like, do, what?
But not a photon torpedo, that is a Trek thing.
See, we're going to mix up those IPs.
We're getting some bleed. Yeah, it happens. B-Wings are fucking cool.
I love B-Wings. They're not maneuverable worth a shit, by the way.
Ask Hera.
Well, I'm not Hera.
Right.
No one is. Now, Steph, when I was looking up information on B-Wings, you would be shocked to learn I found a lot of old forum threads in 2016. Where fanboys were really upset that they broke canon, even though Disney said that none of the Legends stuff is canon anymore.
Okay, what canon is broken by this episode?
Well, B-Wings didn't come around till right before Return of the Jedi, and it wasn't a girl that flew at first. It was Luke Skywalker.
Oh, okay. So that's what they're upset about.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
That Luke Skywalker got supplanted by a girl.
I'm gonna say something that's probably gonna upset a lot of our listeners. Uh-huh. And to quote The Rock, I'm gonna lay some gospel down right now.
Okay.
Canon doesn't matter, and I'm saying that because like we get into the weeds so much about like this can't happen this way, this can't happen that way, blah blah blah. This is fucking fiction. It's sci-fi. It's supposed to just entertain and make us think. And we get into the weeds too much, way too much on this concept of canon. Most people that watch movies and TV shows don't read books. I know it's an unfortunate thing, but it's true. A very small portion of the Star Wars audience doesn't consume books and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And if folks are like are getting really upset over it and are starting to be mean each other over it, or be mean to each other over it, it's not something worth holding on to. And that's why I'm saying canon doesn't matter ultimately, because if it's something that leads people to mistreat each other, it's not something that should be put on an altar.
Boom, there it is. My perspective on canon is this, that canon only matters when you want it to.
Right.
Like when it needs to. And it only matters as long as it supports the story. If the story that is currently being told, if we're like forward looking and the Star Wars story is evolving, and some canon has to change for the story to be told, then that's fine with me.
Yeah.
Like, let's do that. In The Bad Batch, Asajj Ventress is alive.
What?
She's
spoiler. You know,
according to a,
I know.
Fucking 2 weeks ago. And I'm so happy to see her. And I'm so excited and interested to hear the story of why she's here alive on Pabu being a pain in the ass for our heroes, which is kind of her thing.
It was hot.
On brand. When we know that there's this book, Dark Disciple, where in canon she's dead. And dead much earlier, like during the Clone War dead.
Right.
So what happened? And that's things that seem to break canon. Maybe it doesn't break the canon. Maybe it evolves it in a fun, new, interesting way. And you should just wait and see what the story is. And then you can decide if you like the story or not. And if you don't like the story, that's fine. Move on with your life. But don't abuse other fans over it. That's stupid.
Yeah, and that's the message I'm trying to get to, and you of course you said it better than me. When I found out that
we're a team, baby.
When I saw Asajj Ventress in that trailer, my mind immediately went to, oh my god, the possibilities of new shows and new comic books and books. Like, I didn't see it as something that was going to contradict anything. I saw it as potential for more Star Wars and more Star Wars with Asajj Ventress. Yes, please. So. Yeah, so now I do care a little bit about canon. It's cool to know to like get parts of the story filled out a little bit more. But we have gone too far with how we're talking about it, how we're being mean to each other about it. So that's just why I'm saying it doesn't matter anymore.
And when people use canon to be exclusionary, when people use canon to be a racist, to be a bigot, to say that girls and people of color and LGBT people can't exist in the story. That's wrong, and that's evil, and that's shitty.
Yeah.
Like, that is not a good use for canon. If you are using canon to hurt other people, then you're an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what the canon is there for. The canon is there to tell the story. That's why it's canon. It's part of the story. It is not there for you to bludgeon other people with.
Yeah,
just saying. Anyway, okay, so let's get back into Rebels, shall we?
Yes.
Okay, so thank you for all of that information about B-Wings. This particular B-Wing looks like it's made of scraps, because it is.
Is it? I think it's Zeb who says looks like it's gone through a garbage masher.
Right.
What's a garbage masher?
You damn well know what a garbage masher is.
I know what a compactor.
There's one that features very prominently in A New Hope.
That was going to be my question. Is that a garbage masher?
Sure.
Because that's just a compactor.
Right. What, he's just using another word for it.
Okay.
Are you arguing with the canon of compactor versus masher?
It's not canon. Oh my god. I'm going to fucking you know set what? Myself You're right. on fire. That's it.
We should send Dave Filoni a strongly worded email. Okay.
I just want him to hire us. Fucking, please.
It's never going to happen.
Because
we say things like our board.
By the way, when people are accusing us of being Disney shills, I'm like, yes, I want that to be reality.
If you could, please keep putting that into the galaxy. Manifest it with us.
Right.
Anyway, so this B-Wing looks like a prototype because it's a prototype. Okay. This is a first model. That's what prototype means.
Yep.
And Hera is looking at it and she's like, this is awesome. I can't wait to fly it out of here and take it back to the fleet. And I'm like, presumptuous much, Heather?
I know.
Heather? Hera? Whatever your name is. yeah. And that's what Corey's like. Corey's like, are you fucking kidding? I don't know you.
Right.
There has to be a specific pilot for this.
You nearly killed me landing on my house. And now you want to take my fucking ship? I don't think so.
Yeah, like he's just like, no, no, it's not going to happen. They also discover that she, speaking of the landing, the Phantom is super wrecked and they cannot fix it with the spare parts that they've got with them. And also their comms are shot, so they can't even call.
So I'm noticing an observation. The Phantom is getting fucked up a lot this season.
It is. The Phantom's seeing some shit. Yeah. But that's okay, because we're going to fix it.
Yeah.
Corey rolls up with his droid and a bunch of spare parts to help them get it fixed, which is very nice of him. And Hera's like, okay, but dude, we're the only ones that are coming down here to look at your prototype. Who's going to fly your ship if it's not me? And Corey's like, I can wait for the right pilot. It's fine. Like, I've waited this long. I can keep waiting for the right pilot to fly my ship.
Wow.
Because he doesn't know her. He doesn't know that she's the fucking best. Okay. Meanwhile, back in orbit over Ibar.
Oh my gosh.
Agent Callus is casually committing a war crime.
Yeah. Generic Imperial officer shows up and gives him a report that apparently they're on their last legs and they're about to starve them to death. And mwah. But what about the rebels?
They are deliberately withholding all of the food from the populace, except for some of the remote holdouts out in the mountains, because they can't get to them. But they're pretty sure that the remote holdouts in the mountains are the ones who have been in touch with the rebels. And what do we do about the rebel fleet? What if they come back? And Callus says,
oh, they will return. They can't resist helping people in need, which will be the last mistake they make.
He twists his, he doesn't have a mustache, so he twirls his mutton chops. Not really, he should.
And I'm turned on.
Well, you're turned on by war crimes. This is a ding on the war crime counter.
Oh, yeah.
For real, for real. Per international humanitarian law, quote, the use of starvation on the civilian population as a method of warfare is prohibited. So go ahead and apply that to current events in modern context, as you will.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no politics in Star Wars.
None.
None.
In no way is Star Wars a reflection of real life.
No. In no way is Star Wars trying to do what all good sci-fi does and teach us about these kinds of things.
And how could Star Wars have predicted that this type of thing would happen in our modern age? Well, it's a pattern that's happened over and over and over again.
It happens a lot.
Yeah.
We're terrible.
Yeah.
As a species.
I was literally in a conversation with Steph earlier before we recorded about how, I don't know, maybe humans are the villains, and when we...
Maybe we are the problem.
And our concerns about AI are, you know, legit, because a other being that's not human, that's sentient, and it looks at us, and it's like, y'all are bad. Y'all are really bad people. Thus, I declared Sarah Connor is not the hero of the Terminator story. She's the villain.
You know what? That is a whole other... Let's not.
That's a whole podcast. Yeah.
We gotta stop. We gotta get back into Rebels. Okay.
Maybe we watch Terminator. Anyway.
Oh my God. Meanwhile, back at Corey's, Hera and Corey are working on fixing the Phantom. They're chatting. Hera's like, you know, you could have just sent the specs for the ship to Rex. Why would you make us all come all the way out here for this? What? And Corey's like, I can't have just any pilot, okay? They've got to be willing to risk flying to this hellscape, because that's what, in order to show that they want to, that they have the skill to be able to fly this ship.
Yep.
So why did you fly here? And oh my God, we finally get Hera backstory time.
Thank you. We haven't gotten a lot of Hera character story stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And not only was this a cool way to do it, but I kind of teared up a little bit when she's talking about everything. Anyway.
Because here's the thing. That's what season two is doing, is giving us deep dives into each individual character.
Right.
We're learning more about that. We spent all of season one learning about Ezra. Let's learn about everybody else now.
Yep.
So, Hera. The long and short of it is, she was a little girl on Ryloth during the separatist occupation of Ryloth in the Clone War. So her mom hid their family underground, and every now and then she would poke her head out and look up at the sky to see Republic ships flying over, and the Republic ships became like a symbol of freedom for her. And she just wished that she could go fly with them. And so here she is. She's a pilot. And Corey's like, so you left your family to become a combat pilot? And Hera takes his judgmental tone in stride. She turns to him and says,
if we want freedom, we must make difficult choices. I chose to leave my family. I chose to learn to fly. And then I chose to use that ability to help others in need.
And I just love her.
She's such a cool character.
She's so fucking cool.
Yeah.
But it's not just that she's not entirely altruistic here. She loves to fly.
Oh, yeah, no.
Flying is it's more than just her passion. It is her calling. It's her reason to exist is to fly. And that's so fucking cool. And there's a tone that Vanessa Marshall, the voice actor for Hera, is able to bring to this that just rings so sincere. And it turns out there's a reason for that. Vanessa Marshall's dad is that way.
Really?
He's a pilot. He loves to fly. I saw an interview with her. He loves to fly. He owns an open cockpit biplane.
Nope.
Right.
Nope.
Like from a fucking Snoopy cartoon. What? And so it's a two-seater. So she has gone, she doesn't call it flying. She calls it barnstorming.
Yeah.
She's gone barnstorming with her dad. And there's just that, in order to do that, like there's a passion. There's a calling. There's a should have been born a bird that comes with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you are made a terrestrial biped, and that was a mistake in the cosmos, and you should have been given wings. And so that is a tone that she's bringing to this performance in this moment. And it's just fucking cool.
It's so cool.
I love it. And that decides the whole issue for Corey. He's like, you know what? There are beings in need of help, and my ship is in need of a pilot. Let's go. So she's going to be the pilot. He's decided that she might just actually be worth a damn. And I love that.
Meanwhile, the ghost crew are picking up food supplies.
From the broken horn, by the way. Did you notice that?
No, I didn't notice that.
The ship that they're picking up the supplies from, that's the broken horn.
God damn it.
Yeah. And so Ezra's like, why are we, like, not like another transport, but we the ghost picking up these supplies? Because you remember the ghost has a magnet in its belly.
Yep, yep, yep.
And so it can grab these supplies things. And Kanan's like, well, we can't really guarantee that Hera's going to be back in time. So we're going to be making the supply run.
Yeah. And Ezra immediately thinks that's a dumb fucking idea. And Kanan's like, look, we're smaller. We're more maneuverable. We're harder to hit. And Ezra's like, we're still going to get hit.
Ezra's like,
you actually believe that?
It makes me feel better when I say it.
And for me, that's a ding on the Reef Silas personally attacks me personally counter. Because I say that shit all the time. When I'm like, I introduce an idea and people are like, that's dumb, that's stupid. I'm like, well, we're going to try it. And they were like, well, you just said that out loud to make it sound like you're smarter and feel better. I'm like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Correct.
I'm trying to manifest success here. Would you fucking
work
get off my cloud? Jesus.
Jesus.
Anyway, Kanan's like, look, people are starving. We got to do it. So let's go.
Yeah.
Cut back to Hera getting suited up to be the test pilot. I love just flight helmet Hera. Like, just,
right.
She's just got the snood on her head.
Yeah.
It's like, and it goes around her leku. It's really cute.
Yeah. Yeah. So Quarry gives everybody the good news that he has thoroughly tested this B-wing. And every system on the ship should be working properly.
Yeah, no. So Hera is actually sitting in the cockpit of the B-Wing. And Zeb and Sabine are like, so how many times have you flown it, Corey? And Corey's like,
me? Oh, I don't fly. Too dangerous. But theoretically, it should fly.
Theoretically.
And Zeb is so angry.
I love it. We cut to Hera in the cockpit. And I don't know if y'all, like, one of the most commonly used GIFs from Rebels is Hera in a cockpit giving a thumbs up.
Yep.
This is the episode that GIF comes from.
Yep.
Because it's right here.
I love it.
Hera gives a thumbs up. Ah, fucking love it. She takes off in this B-Wing and zips to the edge of the platform and then immediately plummets off the side.
Whoops.
But then, after a suspenseful moment, there's like a rattling, and then all of a sudden, zoom, the B-Wing flies back up and she takes the fuck off, and it's glorious. I love that Space Mom, who's been driving a space minivan for years, is finally behind the wheel of a goddamn sports car. Because she actually says, whew, definitely not a freighter.
Nope.
And that's super real. I actually learned to drive as a teenager on a minivan. Mm-hmm. It was a Dodge Caravan. That was a stick shift, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
So if you, but the thing is about a Dodge Caravan is it's, you're sitting very upright. It's a large vehicle. This stick for the stick shift was like 3 feet long. It was ridiculous.
But
I learned to drive on a minivan. And then my family purchased a Mitsubishi Starion.
What the hell's that?
That is Mitsubishi's attempt to compete with Porsche.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't know what anybody was thinking in bringing this vehicle into our family when you have a teenager who just got her license.
Yeah.
But I learned to drive on a minivan, and then they put me behind the wheel of a sports car. And then I learned about speeding tickets. But the handling is just, the change is just.
Oh, so is this why you ended up with a truck when I met you?
Yeah, I needed the weight.
You needed the weight, yeah.
I needed something that wasn't going to handily accelerate. And it's why now Lucas has the Dodge Charger, not me. I don't need access to 8 cylinders.
Oh, ever. Oh no. And Heather,
ever.
One thing you can never do, ever. I don't care. I don't care what the circumstances, whatever. Do not drive a electric car. Like a Tesla or a Polestar or something like that. Do not.
Okay.
You will fucking... You'll... Because there's no... it accelerates instantaneously, right?
Oh, no. Yeah. There's no, engine to fire up?
Right. It just push goes. Button? Like, that was the first... Like,
I need to try one now.
Yeah. Eric rented a Polestar once, and there's this on-ramp on the freeway that's very difficult, and even the best engines take a little bit to rev up. And we get on it, and Eric just presses down the gas, not really expecting the car to function almost the same way. It does not. We almost hit 6 cars going up behind them. It was insane.
So what I'm saying is I'm a speed demon, and I know that I cannot be trusted with a performance vehicle.
Ever.
Hera, on the other hand, needs to be trusted with a performance vehicle because there are people that are starving, and also it's her calling and all of these things. So there's a really, really cool sequence where she's flying around. She buzzes the airfield, which, by the way, the airfield, when she buzzes it, we get the classic weather vane spin.
Yeah.
And that weather vane, you may have noticed, is shaped like one of the dactylions that seems to be flying around in the air here on Shantipole. So real quick about dactylions.
We're so broken.
Dactylions, they are aka dactyls or dactyloids. They are large winged carnivorous reptavians. God, I love that word. They are native to Utapau, but apparently can also be found on Shantipole. So there you go. This stylized dactylion on the weather vane as she buzzes the airfield. She's flying around. She's fucking loving it. I'm loving watching her loving it. She tests the weapons. She pew-pews. It wasn't as strong as she thought it would be. And so Corey's like, hey, try the big lever on the right there. And she does. And there is a big pew-pew cannon.
Yeah.
On this show.
Were
ship.
You listening to this episode on headphones?
I was.
Did you notice the sound effect they used for that cannon?
No, tell
me. It's very similar to the Death Star.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's got the same kind of thing where it, energy comes from three different points. And it converges into one to be a big... Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Right. Also means when B-Weens get hit by, laser fire and there's no shields, it's going to go boom.
You will.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, big pew-pew cannon does a big boom. We're very impressed. Hera lands, and she's like, that was really awesome. The targeting system needs some work. And Sabine saunters up. She's like, I got some ideas. And Corey's all pissy about it. He's like, you're not going to touch my prototype. And Sabine says,
never get between a Mandalorian and a weapons package.
Why? I don't know why. Speaking of Lord of the Rings, I don't know why the quote, never get between a Nazgul and its prey in my head.
Oh, okay. The fuck just happened?
I don't know. What?
Nobody was speaking of Lord of the Rings.
Well, I was. I made a Lord of the Rings joke earlier.
God, that was an hour ago.
Yeah, I know. My brain's fucking weird.
I love you.
I know.
What the fuck? You're so pretty.
But it's the same energy where she's all, don't fuck with me and my weapons.
Right.
Yeah.
Why would you stop a Mandalorian? This is what they do.
Yeah.
Weapons is what they do. And also, Sabine is a fucking savant when it comes to these things.
Oh, my God.
She's also, we will find out later in the season, very educated in the matters of warfare. Anyway. The phone's ringing on the Phantom. Kanan's calling. All right. Kanan is like, hey, how's it going? Because we're making the run to Ibar right now.
Yeah. Right. Like, now. We're almost there.
Yeah. So the Hera's like, well, shit, we got to go. She gets off the call and she's like, we got to go, but we can't take the B-Wing because the hyperdrive is busted. Because when you fire off the really big weapon, it destroys the hyperdrive, which seems to be a design flaw. And Corey's like, it's a prototype.
Yeah, I was going to need to make tweaks. Of course.
Obviously, I got to change the paint job, too. It's a whole thing. Oh, and you know what? Because this B-Wing is an orangey red, that line from Corey saying, I don't like the paint job, that might be a reference to the color of B-Wings.
Yeah.
Return of the Jedi. I love it.
But Zeb is super pissy. He gets constantly angry this episode.
Well, his space mom keeps getting fucked with.
I know, but...
it's a mess.
But apparently, he used all of his spare parts to fix the hyperdrive on the Phantom.
The Phantom doesn't have a hyperdrive.
That's what I was... So I was going to ask you. I thought they went into hyperspace with the Phantom before... Or am I misremembering?
You're misremembering.
Okay.
The Phantom may have been with the Ghost.
Okay, that's
but probably the Phantom on its own does not have a hyperdrive.
Until now.
But Corey just casually installed a hyperdrive on the Phantom. It even now has an astromech port on the roof.
Right. And that's how that happened. So I completely forgot about that. I did not realize the Phantom didn't have a hyperdrive or an astromech port. So upgrades.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Spend that XP.
And Hera is thrilled. She's like, this is the answer to all of our problems. Amazing. I'm like, okay,
and cool. I'm like, what's the answer? We don't know, because they go to
nope. Meanwhile, back at the blockade run, the rebels are starting their run on it. And Kallus is like, great, they're here. My evil plan worked. Focus all fire on whatever ship has the supplies on it. Well, it's the Ghost.
And Kallus is like, even better.
Right. And he actually name checks the Ghost. He actually calls it the Ghost. Which is not something that we've known that the Empire knew to call it before.
Yeah. Well, you know, Kallus knows now. So, yay. Yeah.
Anyway, so the blockade run, not going great. It's bad. It's like, it's the same idea that you guys had last time.
Yeah.
Only with slightly more maneuverable targets. That's it. That's all you got. And so the whole thing's about to go tits up. But then, surprise, Hera is here. Because they piggybacked the B-Wing with the Phantom, which now has a hyperdrive.
I love that.
Ta-da! So, one of the bridge officers tells Kallus, the rebel reinforcements have arrived. It's two ships? It's a shuttle and something I can't even identify.
Yeah,
I
don't know what that is. It's weird as fuck.
Right, and Kallus is like, oh, two ships. That's hardly reinforcements. I'm very smug and British about this. Right. So... it's Hera and Sabine undock from the Phantom, because it is Hera and Sabine on the B-Wing. Hera's flying, Sabine's on weapons, and Hera's like,
Sabine will get one shot at this, then it's a good thing you trust me.
And that is true. And they fly in, and this little ship, this blade wing, this random weird ship that they just got from a dude, a crazy dude on another planet, takes out an entire cruiser in one shot.
That's hot.
That's real hot. And I'm like, why are these ships not standard issue in the entire rebellion throughout the whole fucking war? Because goddamn. So there's actually an interview with Pablo Hidalgo to explain that.
I knew you were going to reference this. Okay. Because I found said interview.
So he basically explained that different rebel fleets had different complements of ships.
Yeah.
So the rebel fleet that we're with in the original trilogy, which I want to say is Rogue Squadron? They have mostly X-Wings and Y-Wings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's just what they have. And it's because it's not like there's a central manufacturing hub for the Rebellion.
No.
Like, they are operating in cells, and so part of that is a compartmentalization, and they have what resources they have. And they can share, but, like, not always. They've got to organize fleets how they do. So, Rogue Squadron has X-Wings and Y-Wings. Phoenix Squadron, which is who we've got here, they have A-Wings. And soon we'll have B-Wings.
I love that. Also, B-Wings are extremely expensive.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's always going to come down to budget.
It's always going
to
come down to budget. I think Pablo had said that, like, one B-Wing is probably the cost of 40 TIE fighters or something like that. It's
Well, and that's because TIE fighters are the fucking disposable They're disposable.
Well, we found out this week on Bad Batch that there's budget concerns on the Empire, so yeah, they're gonna spit out shitty ass fighters. Yeah.
Poor Tarkin inheriting Dooku's spreadsheets.
I can't wait to talk about Bad Batch. I cannot wait. Anyway.
Callus is sufficiently intimidated. They do bust through the blockade. They make the food drop. The people on Ibar are going to stop starving to death now. Everybody gets home and gets away clean. Amazing. We are back to the Phoenix fleet. Commander Sato lets Quarry know because Quarry's with them. And Quarry's so proud of Hera, by the way.
Yeah.
And so proud of his ship. He lets Quarry know that Senator Organa, who's not there, ding, bail bails, found a shipyard.
You took my opportunity. Okay.
Okay, we can go back.
No, it's fine. You did it. But it is a ding on the bail bails counter, except this time he's actually bailing them out as in investing money to...
Oh, yeah, see? I see what you did there. Yes. Because Senator Organa did find a shipyard that Quarry can go to and keep making B-Wings for Phoenix Squadron. Huh?
We need to fix it first.
Well, he's got to fix that one, but then he's going to start manufacturing them. Mm-hmm. And Quarry calls it Project Shantipole because, again, the TTRPG inspo that happened there. Hera thanks Quarry for everything, and Quarry's like,
I just hammered it together, young pilot. You made it soar.
Aww.
And I love that. Let's go ahead and give her the credit that she fucking deserves here. Speaking of the credit that she fucking deserves here.
Right.
Commander Sato was like, yeah, actually, you kicked a lot of ass today, which is why I'm going to be taking Kanan up on his suggestion.
What suggestion?
Oh, just that you need to be promoted to Phoenix leader.
What?
Yeah. Commander Sato says,
our fighter pilots will benefit greatly from your expertise.
Wow.
Yeah. Her expertise, haters. She's actually legitimately the best pilot that they've got. Hera, though, is shocked. She's like, what? Because she undervalues herself, which is, again, ding, that Reed Silas personally attacking me personally.
I was about to say.
I'm getting attacked a lot in this episode. And she watches, happily shocked, as they all salute her. And Kanan, as he gives her a jaunty little salute, says,
good job, Captain Hera.
And she salutes back, and Kanan is so getting some tonight. Because that is a man who celebrates the extraordinary expertise, the magnificence of this woman in his life, and does everything he can to support her and help her get the recognition that she deserves. Now, a phrase has been tossed around lately on our TikTok that behind every great man is an even greater woman, and that is not the feminist... That is not the feminist slogan that you think it is, okay? Because why she got to be behind him?
Yep.
She's got to be behind him because the patriarchy says that's where she belongs. Okay? That the man, even though he is not as great as her, has to be in the front. Here, right here, that is a great woman. And she's got an equally great man behind her, cheering her on and pushing her to be better and to accept her fucking flowers. Okay? And I love that. And she returns the favor. They are a partnership of equals.
Yeah.
Throughout the story, they do this for each other all the time. And that's why they, Kanan and Hera, are the healthiest relationship in the Star War.
And pretty much every sci-fi IP I like, actually, because I'm cycling through like other sci-fi I like. It's like, nope, they're the healthiest couple of all of them.
Period.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, they're not without their issues.
No, no.
Which we will see later in Rebels. But this supporting each other to be the best that they can be, oh, perfect. They're totally going to bang it out later.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Oh, yeah. Even with that stupid fucking ponytail. Anyway.
You're going to have to get over it.
I'm trying. I'm working so hard.
Hera likes the ponytail.
She can grab onto it.
Do you think he grabs her Leku?
Oh, wouldn't that, like, hurt? Isn't it, like, grabbing your ears?
I don't know. I don't have Leku.
Huh.
I don't know.
Now I'm going to contemplate this for a long time. Anyway.
Bad person. to the fan fiction.
To the fan fiction. Let's find out. Do you have anything else for this episode, Heather?
I don't. Do you?
No, I was very... there was a lot of Star Wars history in this one episode.
Oh, it's so good,
so good.
Right?
Yeah.
I love it. But no, I don't have anything else for Star Wars Rebels Season 2, Episode 7, Wings of the Master.
One of our patrons says, Leku are sense organs, so that would probably suck if you grab onto them.
I think it depends on how you grab.
I'm about to go into so many awful places, stuff that we need to...
It's all about technique, okay?
It's about technique, yeah.
It's about technique. Okay. So, if we don't have anything else for today, then next time, we will be talking about Star Wars Rebels Season 2, Episode 8, Blood Sisters.
That doesn't sound ominous at all.
Not at all.
But if I remember correctly, one of our favorite Star Wars characters ever makes an appearance.
Huh. I don't know. I have not looked ahead, and it's been a while since I've watched.
Yeah.
So I will be happily surprised. Okay, so then are we done here?
Yes.
We should do an outro. Are you ready?
Yes.
What the fuck was that? What the fuck was that?
I wanted the drama for a moment, so I paused.
Oh, my God.
God, that face. Y'all, if you want to see the face of pure hatred, you go to patreon.com/demonspodcast for $5 a month. You, too, can watch Stephanie lose her shit.
You know that we have a history of, like, losing connection during these recordings.
Oh, I know.
So when you give me a long, unnecessary pause, I'm like, panic.
I'm still
panic.
So
what
proud
happened?
Of that practical
what voice. Happened? I hate you. Okay. We're going to outro
your
now.
Your friends!
Hateful bitch. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening. We appreciate that. We appreciate you. I appreciate you more than I appreciate my co-host right now. If you enjoyed the music at the top of the episode, you should. That is a gift to the show from one of our listeners, a recording artist by the name of Chorlzy. You can find him on all the social media as @CHORLSY. If you want to hang out with us in between episodes, and why wouldn't you? We're obviously super fun. You can find us on all of the socials. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok for, you know, as long as that's allowed to exist in the U.S. As @DarkSideDivas.
I also learned stuff that Trollsy is really good at Battlefront. I am not.
Oh, no. that's awesome.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to us. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to our podcast. You can find our podcast on pretty much every platform, including Audible. I didn't know they did podcasts, but now we're on there. Audible? So, yeah, definitely subscribe, leave a review, check it out. We have a YouTube channel, Dark Side Divas. We are going to be doing some stuff very soon. I keep teasing it, but it's happening. Subscribe there. We have a swag store, redbubble.com/officialdivas. I'm told, Steph, that Charles from Gold Squadron Gaze has purchased a mug. So thank you, Charles, for investing in us. Appreciate that. Appreciate that a lot. last but certainly not least, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/divaspodcast, where we have special content, video versions that are unedited of our shows, and we record live. You can join the live recording and watch us be a complete fucking mess. And then access to the best Discord in all the galaxy.
It's true, they are.
Where we do special events and stuff too, like video game nights.
Like playing Battlefront and finding out that the composer of your intro music can kick your ass.
I'm terrible at that game. It turns out. So.
Okay. Are we done? We're going to say goodbye now?
Goodbye.
Bye.